Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information about a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Representative Gabrielle Giffords is recovering her ability to speak. Powell's Books announces layoffs, and Russia cancels daylight savings time.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, a heave, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, February 9th, 2011. U.S. Representative Gabrielle Giffords, recovering from a gunshot wound to the head sustained January 8th, is regaining part of her ability to speak, according to a spokesman. C.J. Karamarjan, would not divulge what Giffords has said other than she asked for toast.
Really?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
It's very good news, he told CNN. Giffords is at TIRR Memorial Hermann Rehabilitation Hospital in Houston. She was moved there late last month from University Medical Center in Tucson, Arizona, where she was taken after the shooting at a Congress on Your Corner event at a Tucson supermarket. Six people were killed in the incident. Giffords was among 13 injured. Authorities have said they believe Giffords was targeted in the shooting. The 22-year-old suspect, Jared Lee Loeffner, is facing federal charges. Giffords' office said she actually spoke her first words before Wednesday morning, but has been speaking more since then.
I like to think that if I had the presence of mind, that if I was injured horrifically or if I was in some sort of a coma, that I would just, that some small, fortitude-filled part of my brain would be able to mutter Rosebud just right as I was sort of drifting in and out of consciousness. Just for a goof, just for a laugh.
I had a friend who actually managed to do one of the better ones. She was coming out of anesthesia after an operation, and the doctor was there. They're like, oh, there you are. You're coming awake. How you feeling? And she looked at him and she said, I'm Batman.
That'd be great just to screw with people for a bit. Or just to start speaking in a different language.
By the way, I wanted to thank you for the way you said my name at the top of the show. There was just something kind of extra sexy about it. When you said, Don Taylor is preparing the following. It was kind of sultry.
Okay. Well, let's all pretend that was intentional.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we got your entertainment news. Also, we have your Science on the March coming up at the bottom of this hour, and so forth. If you want to get this program later on the day, you can do it via iTunes. Also, as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. It's available on your mobile device as well. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Citing changing customer behavior and adverse market conditions, Powell's Books announced layoffs Tuesday. The independent bookseller did not confirm how many employees would be laid off, but said various locations would be affected. Emily Powell, president of Powell's Books, said in a news release, "I feel it's critical to make some very difficult adjustments at this time to address our current reality and to prepare the company for success in the future, a future that looks very different than our business today." The manner in which people read has changed dramatically over the past few years, according to company officials. They mentioned specifically the rise of e-books. The rising cost of health care and the sluggish economy also played part in the decision. While jobs will be shed at Powell's, more and more readers are purchasing books in digital form.
The way that people read has apparently changed inside the studio as well.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
I just didn't feel like reading the man in the street comments.
Really?
I just thought I would skip over the man in the street comments.
Is it because the man in the street is not all that bright most of the time?
Well, yeah. It's like, okay.
Me no like books.
Well, this one guy said, "I think it's a big trend and one that I don't necessarily like."
Me dislike what me don't understand. Okay.
Somebody else said, "I think there will always be people that want a real book in their hands. I always will." So, you know,
I don't even think that's grammatically correct. Okay. Well, whatever.
See, that's why I was trying to skip over it, but I got all tripped up.
Let me just say that I was watching KGW last night for reasons that sort of pass understanding, because KGW is just the home. I know it sounds like I pick on them all the time, but they are just the home of bad grammar and bad writing.
Yeah,
they are the home of just where you just pick up just a smattering of commas and you throw them at the page, even if they're not in the right place, and then you do that by taking commas from other places where they really ought to be. And they have that approach to their, not just the actual news writing, but to their delivery as well. And I think they were the ones I saw talking about the Powell story last night. Their man on the street comments were not. They were not indicative of a future in which everyone has a book at the ready, just at every moment. But there was also this strange moment during during last night's KGW news when I wish that I had audio of it and I don't. But they were talking about some changes that the airlines have made to try to induce people to fly a little bit more and to try to augment the number of people that are using air transportation. And I swear to God, the anchorwoman just said, "These changes, including free booze." And then she just let it trail off into nothing, as though she were just, like, thinking dreamily about it for a moment. I wish I had...
booze, she thought to herself.
And it was one of those things where I was out of the room, too, and so I couldn't quite see who said it. I just ran back in to try to see who had made that statement, but it could have been any of them, as far as I know. The thing about this that sucks for Powell's, apart from the obvious, is that this is the first time they've ever had to do layoffs.
Yeah.
They've never, to my knowledge, had to lay off employees in their history, so it's... It sucks for them in a lot of ways. I mean, no more so than anybody else losing a job, I suppose. But it's just a culture shock there, as opposed to every other business, which has just gotten used to the fact that you're going to walk in, HR is going to be sitting in your cubicle some random day.
It seems a shame that they can't. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they've tried. I'm giving them credit to imagine that they've tried to figure out ways that they could get around laying people off.
Yeah.
But I know that their mail order business is huge. They do a huge web sale business, so it just seems a shame that, you know, they couldn't transfer people from one place to another or something like that. But
well, they may have. Yeah. I just I don't know how many people have Howell's employees, because they got the four stores if you count the airport, plus they get the warehouse. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's, you got to figure what they have, like 1,000 people maybe.
Yeah.
So like 31 people. I don't know. I like to think that if Powell's was laying people off, that it's because they don't necessarily have any choice or because they've tried to navigate around that. But, who's to say?
Detroit will start a program to increase public safety by offering police officers and firefighters foreclosed homes for as little as $1,000. Mayor Dave Bing says about 50 officers already have expressed interest.
There's no doubt in my mind that public safety is a hallmark for any urban city. And we had way too many of our police and firemen that didn't live in the city. We had to figure out some kind of way to bring them back in.
So See, and as a result of seeing that Super Bowl commercial, now I feel bad every time I want to make fun of Detroit. Mm-hmm. Now I just feel like Eminem's going to show up and put a beat down on me.
I don't know. In this case, it's kind of like, you know, we can't afford to give them raises or bonuses, but we can benefit from other people's tragic failures.
Have a burned-out cinder of a home. Did you, you know, here's something that I did not know until I saw this. I was watching it again last night because it's one of the best done commercials I've seen in a long time. Have you actually seen the Chrysler commercial, the Detroit commercial?
No.
Oh, you got to watch it. It's great.
I know. I need to actually, since I didn't watch the Super Bowl, I need to go like on Hulu or wherever and watch all the Super Bowl commercials so I'm not culturally illiterate.
Because that's one of those commercials that I had missed somehow because, like you, I didn't watch most of the big game. I just I went online and I was watching most of them on the on Hulu or on YouTube or something. And then Aaron had commented on it. Aaron's like, "Oh, did you see the Chrysler commercial with Eminem?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Oh, you got to watch it." And it's just it's astounding. It's really, really, really good. What I did not know is it's also done by Wieden Kennedy, which because immediately I was like a nerd. I was went to Ad Age magazine and was reading all about the background of the various spots and the ad agencies that created them and. Anyway, it's quite compelling, but it did have that great. It has one of the best taglines. I don't even want to give it away, but the commercial has one of the best taglines. It's whoever came up with it deserves a little bit of a raise or a promotion. But the tagline at the end of the commercial, it shows the new 200 or whatever the new car is, and it just says imported from Detroit. That's a great slogan.
That is.
It really is fantastic. I admire
that
people.
That actually gave me a little chill.
Yeah. The commercial does a fantastic job of simultaneously making Detroit seem like a place that is slightly different from and different than and apart from America, but also part of America. And it conjures up a great confluence of emotions. It's hard to do in this case, 120-second commercial. So you got to watch it if you get a chance.
I will. For the first time since 1981, Russians won't be setting their clocks forward for daylight saving time this
spring. Clock will set you! Not even funny. Don't know why I did it.
Because you can't help yourself, that's why.
No one can help themselves. Like it's just me. No one can stop themselves from doing that now. It's just become a thing that you have to say.
President Dmitry Medvedev told RIA Novosti news agency yesterday, "I decided to cancel the shift to winter time starting from the autumn." He said he worried the seasonal change may lead to stress and illnesses.
Yes, that's what leads to stress and illnesses, is setting your clock an hour one way or the other.
The Russian president has been waging war on the time change for several years now. In 2009, he ordered the economy ministry to look into abandoning daylight saving time.
Maybe it's indicative of what causes some of the stress in Russia that the guy is waging war on daylight savings time.
Last year, Russia decreased the number of national time zones from 11 to 9. I'm going to see if I can find this quote. I had this and I didn't set it aside. I can't. I had it on time. There was this great quote from him where he was explaining that it's just daylight savings time just confuses and upsets people.
Really? Is that 'cause I don't know? Is this because?
Here we go. Here's his quote. "It's just irritating. People either oversleep or wake up early and don't know what to do with the hour."
It sounds like somebody's projecting a little bit.
Sounds to me like he's just like way overly focused on things that might not be that important.
Is this because like he just missed a meeting at one point and so now it's like everybody must have daylight savings time removed from their lives?
quite possibly.
Jesus. All right.
Yes.
Waging war on it. Going house to house, exterminating it and imprisoning its relatives in a dacha somewhere.
Daylight savings. I would punch it in the pants if it were a man.
Where did the daylight savings time go? Daylight savings time is recovering in countryside at dacha. Do not ask about daylight savings time. We'll return later.
Yelp. Because you know how
I need somebody, Yelp. I thought that's what you were waiting for.
No, I was just going to say Yelp, of course, being one of those community-run websites where it's all like people's opinions.
You know what? I had that application on my phone. I had the Yelp app, which makes me sound like I'm one of those yip yip creatures from Sesame Street.
Or you're like that that woman on that NPR interview who had the Alzheimer's or whatever it was.
Alzheimer's, not Alzheimer's, Tourette's. But I like the idea of somebody with Alzheimer's and Tourette's.
Right.
They can't quite remember how to swear, but they really want to. They just can't remember anything to shout. So there's just a lot of like, Anyway, I had the Yelp app for one day on my phone, and then I removed that because it's, I discovered, first of all, it's one of those things that wants to track where you are every moment of the day, where it's like, the, you know, the Yelp application would like to know where you are every second of your existence. Can we do this? And I just said, no. And it kept asking me, you know, can we know where you are now? And I said, well, no, just for no readily apparent reason, but no. And so it just kept nagging me about it. And also, I found that the reviews were written really badly.
The reviews are not only written really badly, they're written by people who are just normal people who aren't writers, but who are trying to be writers.
Yes.
And they're all trying to be clever, and they all take this specific tone.
There is a tone for that.
This really, like, smugly kind of trying too hard to be clever tone.
Yeah, it's like a sub-snark.
Yeah, it's really annoying. Anyway, they did a thing, you know, because Valentine's Day is coming up, where they decided to try and track what people searched online to find what city was the most romantic in the United States. Looking at things like searches for romantic restaurants, chocolate-covered strawberries, lingerie, things that, you know, they think would be sexy. So all of this information, all of this data combined, in the power of Yelp.
Minneapolis.
Well, let's say the number five most romantic city is El Paso, Texas.
Okay, well.
Number four, New Haven, Connecticut.
Okay.
Number two, Santa Cruz, California.
Did we skip number three?
Oh, yeah, they put two twice.
Okay.
There's a little typo here. That was three. Number two is Los Angeles, which I think, you know, would get a lot of searches for things simply because
it's
a billion people live
big.
There.
It's big, yeah.
So imagine, if you will, what the most romantic city in the United States is.
And it's not Minneapolis.
It is not.
It's not Tacoma. I don't know.
It's Tacoma.
Are you kidding me? I was just effing with you right there.
No. Tacoma, Washington.
See, but you know, it was irony, Don. I said Tacoma.
I know, because it couldn't possibly be Tacoma.
And because I'm not allowed to say Detroit anymore. So I went to the next best thing. Really?
Tacoma, which apparently has the nickname Tacompton.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Because.
Okay.
Because of all the shootings. I think. Yes. For some reason, yeah. Tacoma also, by the way, is on different lists for being one of the most stressful cities in the country, having one of the highest divorce rates, and having one of the highest crime rates in the country.
Yeah.
But apparently, when people aren't killing each other or breaking up their marriages, they're looking for chocolate-covered strawberries.
Well, maybe that's because everybody in Tacoma constantly has something for which they need to, you know, something they need to make it right. You know, like in Tacoma, you've always been caught selling crack, or you've always just gotten out of jail, or you're getting ready to go to prison. You're going to do your 10-year bid, as they say.
So you feel you owe someone some lingerie.
Yeah, you got to be buying your lady friend a little something before you go off to solitary, you know, for the next decade. Or perhaps you've bungled some sort of a gangland-style execution that you were supposed to be carrying out, and so you got to try to make it make it right with the guy who runs the gang, and you feel that maybe he'd prefer some ladies under things. He'd like the soft, silky feel of lingerie, against him. And so you feel like that's the way out of your predicament.
Well, the next time you're looking for for a little romance.
Tacoma, really?
Tacoma, Washington.
What are the odds that I would have? Okay, well, all
I
right.
know. Well, you were just trying to. I mean,
I was trying to think of the least romantic, least pleasant. I mean, you might as well move to a sewer. I mean, it's like living inside a rendering plant. There's no point in living in Tacoma at all. Zero. And I mean that literally and figuratively. There's no point in living there. If you live in Tacoma, basically every day just becomes about, you know, like getting to the next day, which is in turn about getting to the next day, which is in turn about eventually just dying, so you're rid of the whole place.
Okay. I've only just been through Tacoma on my way elsewhere. That's kind of it.
Yeah, the our friend Lisa Desjardins was driving. She drove to. Let's see if I can get this correct. She flew in from the East Coast, and she landed at SeaTac or something, but she was driving somewhere else. Like, she was ending up in, like, I don't know, she was ending up in, like, Idaho or someplace. She was going to visit somebody. Anyway, but she and her husband drove through Tacoma, and they ended up stopping there. And she sent me a text message about, currently in Tacoma, have never been here before. I'm trying to get from car to hotel and from hotel to car as soon as, you know, as fast as possible without spending any time outdoors. Feel that I may be shot or catch something. So
now I'm wondering if the is the Marriott Hotel at the SeaTac Airport vicinity Marriott Hotel is that in Seattle or is that in Tacoma?
It's in SeaTac, which is its own city.
Oh, okay.
SeaTac, which as you might imagine is it is. And I don't know if it's actually zoned as its own city, but SeaTac is treated as its own city by everybody.
Okay.
SeaTac, by the way, is distinguished by having a large number of, they're not quite casinos, but they're not quite bars. They're card rooms. And so they're places where you can, they have certain gambling, they have certain things you can gamble on, but not, like, I don't have slot machines or whatever, but there are certain games of chance that one can play there. And so it's bars and pawn shops and card rooms everywhere.
Yeah, the Marriott, people say the Marriott SeaTac is in Seattle.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, if it's actually technically in Tacoma, I have been to Tacoma because I went to my very first science fiction convention there, and that's where I met Neil Gaiman.
Really?
So you could say, yes, I met Neil Gaiman in Tacoma.
And you feel, this is one of those things where you really do feel bad for you feel bad for the red man, Don, because, you know, the Tacoma Indians are undoubtedly
a
proud and noble people, as apparently all Indians everywhere were.
A romantic people.
That's right. And a people who probably didn't engage in a lot of drive-bys. And, you know, and now Whitey has come and taken their name and he's stuck it on Tacoma, which is one of the worst places in the Western Hemisphere. So,
well, congratulations, Tacoma.
Well done. You are the home of romance.
Speaking of romance, local coffee shops in Washington State have tried creative marketing approaches to distinguish themselves. Among the techniques adopted by some are the bikini baristas. One shop in Yakima even featured pole dancing.
Here's the thing, is I was about, just now in the last story when you said, what's the most romantic city on earth? I almost said Yakima, because again, it sucks. But I didn't, because I made a Yakima joke yesterday, and I thought I would rotate back around to Detroit. But here, Yakima presents itself.
Well, after the pole dancing coffee bar, Yakima fought back, enacting an ordinance that banned baristas from wearing G-strings and see-through clothing. Now the ordinance has been upheld in a criminal case against the owner of Dream Girls Espresso, whose name is Cheryl Clark. She was found guilty of violating the city's indecent exposure ordinance Friday after a municipal court jury trial. The bikini barista at issue reportedly wore shorts that were too skimpy and too sheer. Clark could face up to 90 days in jail when she's sentenced later this month. She says she'll appeal. Meanwhile, the case has brought her coffee shop international publicity. The UK's Daily Mail, for example, features an article about Clark's conviction with a big photo of one of the Dream Girls baristas on their cover. The barista was also charged in the indecent exposure case, but she was acquitted by the jury. The Yakima Herald Republic says a lack of evidence contributed to the city's defeat. Having neither taken photos of the barista nor seized her shorts, the government was forced to rely on a scanty lace garment provided after the fact by the barista as the alleged attire.
I mean, understand this. Who was this? Was this a jury of some kind, or was this cops?
No, it was a jury.
Were they
trial.
Having to handle her underthings
to say that this is what she says she was wearing? But apparently, they couldn't prove. Yes, one prosecutor held up the offending panties while the other pulled downward on their lower corners, asking the jury, "Can you see through this?" If that was what she was wearing that day, it was too little.
Normally, this is the kind of thing you might find alluring or arousing in some way, but just by setting the story in Yakima, it just becomes horrifying. And I'm just picturing, like, I just want to wear rubber gloves on my ears while listening to this.
I have a little bit of a thing where I have nothing really against scantily clad ladies. I just don't really like them in situations where there's food being served.
Yeah.
Or they're dealing with, like, potentially dangerous, equipment, like the steamers for espresso machines. It makes me intensely uncomfortable.
Well, because this is scalding, just waiting to happen.
You know, and also I've gone to places to eat where there were ladies who were wearing very little clothing, and I don't really want to see someone's butt.
Yeah.
While I'm trying to eat food.
Well, that's like, you know,
it just, even if it is a pretty butt, I don't know.
This is like, and you know, again, God love you. Whatever it is makes you happy in your life. That's why I'm not one of those people that just like, you know, what are you going to do tonight? I'm going to go to the Acropolis and I'm going to
have their $2 steak dinner.
We're going to go to their salad buffet while I watch some girl, you know, show me her genitals for a dollar. You know, it's just it. You know,
well,
something about that just doesn't
that that seem weird?
Yes, it does.
That you'd be sitting there just going chomp, chomp, chomp on a radish while somebody's like dancing, you know, to
you know, while I'm inspecting the top. I'm inspecting the inside of some girl from Milwaukee. No, I don't think so. By the way, let me read this email from our listener Owen. It says, I had never been to Yakima before, and I thought I would take a look via Google Maps after hearing your comments on today's Legion of News. This is yesterday. He said, I don't even remember why we were talking about Yakima yesterday.
Nah, I don't either.
But he said, after hearing your comments on Legion of News, I randomly clicked on a point, this is on Google Maps, near the city center of Yakima, Washington, and found myself staring at a Chex cashed store that looked built to survive nuclear fallout. Spinning the camera around, I saw a building with the words URM Cash and Carry painted on the wall and a for sale sign on the corner. Google Maps indicated to me that an Ace Cash Express was located just down the road. For those of you who are keeping score at home, that is three cash places, that one of those cash and carry, your cash, your paycheck here places, or payday loan places, within what is less than one square block. He says, if there's anything I've learned in my young life, it's that the health and well-being of a community has a direct and inverse relationship to the number of check cashing businesses. Truly, Yakima must be a special hell, and I will be avoiding it. Thank you for the heads up. He says, P.S., you can verify all this by visiting 12 South 5th Avenue near West Yakima Avenue on Google Maps. Thank you for the show, Owen. So, thank you, Owen. Here is Don Taylor.
The Tea Party is causing some trouble for Republicans again. On Tuesday, the GOP-led House failed to pass a temporary extension of the Bush-era Patriot Act after 26 Republicans voted against it. Democrats split on the bill, resulting in a total final tally of 277 to 148, seven votes short of the two-thirds majority needed. The vote made strange bedfellows of Democrats and Tea Party-inspired Republicans who feel the act's provisions are a violation of personal privacy. The House bill proposed an eight-month extension of three key provisions of the act. The first allows inspections of a suspect's personal materials, such as library records. The others permit roving wiretaps and surveillance on individuals who are not associated with a known terrorist group. The GOP ultimately aims to make the act permanent. Meanwhile, the Senate is pondering a Democrat-sponsored bill that would extend current Patriot Act provisions until 2013.
Now, I'm just getting nothing at Yakima comments, by the way. No. Greg says, FYI, soldiers who end up stationed in Yakima refer to it as Yakistan. Which is great. I don't know why.
Anything is funny when you add Stan to it.
It really is.
Somebody would like you to know, rest assured, the Acropolis keeps the steaks and ass separate.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, okay.
They also almost always have a posting on their reader board saying chef wanted. Like cooks need it.
Like they just can't quite keep good help.
They can't keep kitchen help for some reason.
You were listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. You know, this is what's going to happen is at some point, we keep talking about doing a show from, like, you know, Australia or yesterday, Denver. Were you here when Greg and Sarah were talking about doing a show from Denver?
No.
Apparently, Greg and Sarah, I think I may have agreed to this without actually really listening to it. I think I may have agreed to go do take the whole studio on the road and go do a show from Seamus's house. I'm not even really sure that he was asked about it. I think they may have just decided it had to happen.
Is he putting us up?
Apparently, he lives near the Shining Hotel.
Ooh.
So, I think Greg and Sarah just shouted something. I was in the break room, and they just said, hey, do you want to go, pack up everything and just go do a show from the Shining Hotel and visit Seamus sometime this spring? And I think I just went, uh-huh, sure, and just kind of continued writing whatever I was writing. So we may be doing that, I guess.
I've never been to Denver. That would be nice.
Yeah, apparently none of us have been to Denver. We've all wanted to go. I don't even know what I was going to talk about just there. Wait. But as a result of this, you know, our karma will be that we'll end up doing the show in Yakima as well, just FYI.
Okay.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program, Hick Watch, Democracy on the March. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week will be joining us, and we will get to that top five, come hell or high water.
So is Aaron Mesh flaking on us, then?
He is, I believe. Oh. Well, I don't know that it's Aaron Mesh flaking so much as maybe Kelly is just fighting for the chance to be part of the show.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it's a rare and irreplaceable opportunity. It's a golden chance to speak to some of the, to speak to the upper crust of Portland, of Portland's listening audience.
Maybe Aaron Mesh is having a mustache-related emergency.
It seems like that facial hair of his takes a lot of work. There's a lot of maintenance probably put into that.
He's like a lady who like colors her hair like every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Every time I see him, his facial hair is different.
He's like one of those, what are those toys called? Like the Whimsical Willy or whatever.
Yeah.
It's where you like move the the bearded bob thing where you move the metal shavings around. That is Aaron Mesh. He looks like he's waiting to be cast in a Wes Anderson film.
Yes.
I mean that in a good way. Anyway, so Kelly Clark from Willamette Week joining us next hour at the Rick Emerson Show. Hick Watch, Democracy on the March, and the Top 5, etc. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Here's your science news, by the way. I know it sounds like I'm just interrupting. I'm interrupting our own show just constantly this hour with stuff. But you would not believe the number of emails I got from people asking that we extend the science news and make it a longer section. And at one point, a guy demanded that we make a, like a, that we create a spinoff show that's just nothing but science news with Dawn and Rick.
Well, yes, I do have one of those emails here in front of me from podcast listener Andy, who writes, "Good God, you guys, please do more science news. I now know that there is essentially no difference between huffing gas fumes and breathing the atmosphere of our planet, or that fish don't simply extract the dissolved oxygen from the water with their gills.
Yeah.
That they actually destroy the water molecule to breathe the oxygen element contained within."
Here is Dawn Taylor.
Prince Charles lashed out Wednesday at climate change skeptics, saying they are playing a reckless game of roulette with the planet's future. Skeptics are having a corrosive effect on public opinion, the British heir to the throne added. Their suggestion that hundreds of scientists around the world are somehow unconsciously biased creates the implication that many of us are secretly conspiring to undermine and deliberately destroy the entire market-based capitalist system, he said.
Well, isn't that true?
Probably not.
Okay.
Many doubters, particularly in the United States, have dismissed scientific evidence supporting warming of the Earth due to human activity, arguing that the large majority of scientists are wrong or that the consequences of warming overstated. Charles asked, "How are these people going to face their grandchildren and admit to them that they failed their future?"
I'm going to do it by not having grandchildren, by the way.
Along with the top officials of the European Union, Charles was addressing the Low Carbon Prosperity Summit, a conference devoted to engaging more European businesses in promoting a low-carbon economy. In a speech to a packed European Parliament chamber, Charles touched on topics ranging from the need to protect fisheries and the Amazon rainforest to making low-carbon emissions affordable and competitive. He's been active in promoting environmental issues and was asked to participate in the conference to raise public awareness. The prince is a patron of the Cambridge Program for Sustainability Leadership, which works with business, government, and civil society to promote a sustainable economic future.
That just turned into a press release at some point. It was a story, and then it just became some crap that a guy gave you that you just repeated.
Yeah, not that I care. Yeah. NASA is checking Space Shuttle Discovery to see if it was damaged by a dropped tool. Discovery is supposed to blast off February 24th for the International Space Station after a delay of nearly 4 months. A NASA spokeswoman said Wednesday that a measuring gauge came apart. The tool may have struck Discovery's external fuel tank as it fell. The mishap occurred Tuesday night during repair work. Spokeswoman Kendria Thomas said the metal gauge is small. It was tethered properly to a worker but came apart and some pieces fell. This week, workers are replacing a shuttle seal to prevent another hydrogen gas leak. Leaking gas halted the countdown in November, and fuel tank cracks contributed to the lengthy delay. They're having trouble getting that thing off the ground.
Do you ever do those where you're sitting, you're at home, and it's always at night for some reason? I think maybe because I say venturing onto the thin ice of my own scientific knowledge once again. I think it's because the air cools at night, and so that's when the house contracts and it starts to make all the creaking noises at night, because as opposed to during the day when it expands. But that's why, so, you know, you're sitting there and you're up and it's 1:30 in the morning and maybe everybody else is asleep or you're just sort of watching TV or whatever, and the house just does that at night, and you kind of look up at the ceiling and you wonder if there are gremlins on the roof or whatever. I wonder if the space shuttle does that. Like when you're in space, if as you're orbiting the Earth or you're flying around in the stratosphere or whatever it is you do, if the space shuttle makes sort of old house noises, sort of at night or when it gets away from the sun, and what it must be like to be in space and then just to hear the walls of the space shuttle occasionally go and just creak a little bit. It's got to be a uniquely unnerving sensation.
It would be, yeah. Well, you've ever seen those movies where people are in submarines and you hear all of the noises for the metal? We both just said the noise, by the way.
Okay. Yeah.
Apple's production partners are already hard at work on a new model of iPad, according to a report in the Wall Street Journal.
No buttons.
The fact that Apple is working on an iPad 2 is common knowledge. The famously tight-lipped company rarely talks about
it. What?
An iPad 2.
What does that mean?
I believe what that means is that this...
An iPad?
I believe the story that I'm reading, it was supposed to say an iPad 2.
Okay. All right.
And they turned it into one purge.
Anapad.
And then I thought for a moment, oh, that's interesting.
Anapad may cause intestinal bloating.
Everything's animated on it.
Okay.
I'll believe anything if it's written on the page in front of me, apparently. Anyway, Apple has never denied that it intends...
Anapad. Oh, that's great. Doctors recommend Anapad.
It sounds like the worst feminine hygiene project ever.
I was going to say that, too. It was like some sort of a thing with wings on it. Mm-hmm. It holds blue liquid.
And when you take it off, it's got like a giraffe face smiling at you.
Okay. So, yes, the new iPad.
Yeah. Nearly $5 billion worth. Okay, now I'm just all over the place. Nearly $5 billion worth of iPads have been sold in the last three quarters since its launch. And the prototype of the iPad 2 was apparently spotted by a reporter after the launch of News Corp's iPad publication, The Daily, last week. An unconfirmed report from DigiTimes in November said that Foxconn, the Chinese makers of the iPhone and iPad, had already been ordered to manufacture the iPad 2 in market-ready quantities by the end of February.
Yeah, because, I've been hearing forever that it was going to be coming out in mid-March, the segment. And they actually, Jobs was accidentally photographed using what looks very much like the next iPad. I think last week there was a photograph of him like at an airport somewhere holding, you know, a suspicious device that was angled just so somebody could get a photo of him using it.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal report carries three bylines and cites, quote, people familiar with the matter.
Uh-huh.
Because that makes it trustworthy. Offers a few details. It confirms the widely held belief that the iPad 2 will have a front-facing camera, enabling it to do FaceTime video conferencing. It says the 3G version will be available on Verizon and AT&T, with Sprint and T-Mobile still shut out. But it contradicts earlier reports that Apple will endow the iPad 2 with a higher resolution screen, much as the iPhone 4 had a significantly higher resolution than the 3GS. Apple is likely still working on a higher quality iPad display. It just won't be ready for the iPad 2. So,
does it say anything? I know I keep fixating on this. Does it say anything about the button?
No.
Because the story has been for the longest time that the iPad 2 isn't going to have any, because it has a single button on it right now. And apparently Jobs didn't even want that. He just hates buttons. Not unlike M. Emmett Walsh hates cans. Steve Jobs hates buttons. Didn't want the iPad to have any buttons. It's why the iPhone only has, on the surface screen anyway, on the control screen, only has the single button. They apparently are trying to get rid of that button for the iPhone 5, and they're trying to get rid of the single button for the iPad 2 as well, which I have sort of mixed feelings about, because I was talking to Siegfried about this, and he's a big Apple nerd, and he and I were doing what Apple nerds do, just sitting in the kitchen and, you know, congratulating ourselves on, you know, on our rarefied taste. And he was saying that he has a next-door neighbor who's like 75 who was like, well, I want one of them smartphones so I can text with my boy, you know? And it was just, and so Siegfried was like, well, you know, okay, and walked him through the different choices. The guy ended up going with an iPhone. And apparently the guy liked the fact that on the iPhone, no matter how confused he got, no matter how wonky things seemed to go, like if he just got himself deep into some application he couldn't quite figure out what he was doing, he could just press the one big button at the bottom of the screen and it would take you back to zero. In that way, the iPhone really is like a jitterbug.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Whatever you're doing, if you just hit that one big button at the bottom, you're going to go back to start and you'll be back where things make sense again.
I will say this for my iPhone too. Everybody, I've only ever had to deal with like calling them about something once, calling like AT&T or whoever about something once, and they were so nice. It was scary.
Yeah,
it's like I told you about when I bought my phone and the guy brought it out and handed it to me with both hands and said, "Here is your new phone."
In swaddling clothes,
he was presenting me, yes, with the baby Jesus. And when I had to call, it was like the guy was the nicest, friendliest, like it was. It was like Disney friendly.
Yeah.
You know, Disney employee friendly. And him explaining to me, oh, well, what you might want to do, turn off your phone and then just wait for a few seconds. Turn it. Cause, and he's like explaining all of these things to me. And he was so chipper and nice. It was like, it was kind of awesome.
Well, there must have been some sort of regulation passed down to them from Apple saying, like, we are giving you a golden opportunity, you know, by being, for that time anyway, the only company that had the iPhone. But, like, if you, you know, and so, but therefore, in exchange for that, you will do the following, like, 700 things.
Yeah.
And one of them is you will institute the following kind of customer service, because Jobs is just nuts about that, the way that Disney is. And as much as it kind of sucks, to work for Disney, I think, in some ways. And as much as we all make fun of that experience, that is the thing where, like, when you go to Disneyland, you are, to whatever extent it is possible, you're going to have, like, a sort of hermetically sealed good time, you know, in exactly the way that, you know, that they have determined people want, by force, if necessary. So that's, you know, kind of the way that Apple operates as well.
Well, as Valentine's Day cards attest, humans value love and friendship that aren't just forged by family ties, common interests, or sexual attraction. Now researchers have determined that such human-like friendships exist among at least five different types of animals. Prior studies determined that elephants, dolphins, some carnivores, and certain non-human primates, such as chimpanzees, have the ability, just as humans do, to maintain enduring friendships in a highly dynamic social environment. A new study published in the latest issue of the Proceedings of the Royal Society B adds bats to the list. Female wild Bechstein's bats prefer to literally hang out with certain friends while they also keep loose ties to the rest of their colony. Lead author Gerald Karth told Discovery that these bat buddies mirror human ones. Despite all their daily chaos, the bats are able to maintain long-term relationships. He explained, "We do not work, play, and live together with the same individuals all the time during the day and week, but nevertheless, we're able to maintain long-term relationships with our friends and our family, despite our often chaotic and highly dynamic social lives." Basically, they did a bunch of studies looking at bats over a period of 5 years. The male bats of the species are solitary, but females roost together in bat boxes and tree cavities, and they prefer certain companions over the years. They have friends. In addition to resting together, colony members exchange information among each other about suitable roosts, make flexible group decisions where to communally roost next, groom each other, and profit from communal roosting through the warming of each other.
I wonder if they all kind of get together and gossip about, like, Carol, you know, at the who's in the, like, the, you know, the bat cave or whatever down the street. You know, she's not married and she's 12.
Well, I think it's really interesting because they say they've found long-term social relationships like this in elephants, dolphins, chimpanzees, and humans. But I think, I don't know. I mean, I think that you can see them in other kinds of animals as well. If you've ever, you know, ever observed, like, groups of ducks or something, for example, it seems like certain ducks, you know, prefer the company of other ducks, and then they'll be mean to, like, this one other duck.
I remember this. I can never trust ducks. Ducks, they're on the short list of animals that I look askance at them. Ever since I learned, it seems like information I didn't need. And in fact, the more I think about it, the more I'm certain it's probably something I could have gone my whole life without knowing. When I was in, like, 11th grade or something, where the teacher went out of his way to make sure that we knew that mallard ducks were, that they were a rapey kind of animal. And he said that they were one of only three species on Earth where that was known to happen with regularity. One was, it was humans, mallard ducks, and some kind of other primate, and then, like rats or something. And he said, you know, and so mallard ducks and I, we're on opposite sides of the fence. And I look at them and there's just something shifty about them.
Yeah, I used to spend summers at a place where my grandmother lived right on the water, and there were all these ducks. And so I sort of anthropomorphized the ducks and I gave them all names. And one day I was explaining, I was really horrified because this one male duck, who I called Steve, and he was being just really just brutal to Gertrude, who was this other female duck, and he was, like, climbing up on top of her and he kept biting her on the neck and he was beating her up, and my mother had to very gently explain to me that he wasn't really just beating her up, really.
From the inside.
Yeah.
Yes.
That it was, and I was like, going, but she doesn't want to be doing that. I can tell. She really doesn't want to.
Your mom explained to what Gertrude got for squawking back.
No. Said, so, well, look at her looking all pretty like that. She was asking for it.
Squawk when spoken to. Hey, by the way, just so we can end this on a non-rapey note.
By the way, I never liked Steve after that.
You didn't want to be alone with him?
I wouldn't give him any bread.
I
shunned him.
You should know that I'm wearing boxer shorts covered with bats.
Oh.
It was kind of weirding me out, actually, hearing talk about bats a lot, because then I wondered, even though I knew this was not true, if you were doing it because of my boxer shorts, even though that's ludicrous.
Maybe I know. Maybe I knew.
Okay. Is that the end of science?
Uh-huh.
Okay, there you go. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. It's 503-252-1609. That is how you contact them. Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. 0-9. Speaking of which, at some point I need to follow up with that guy that started the gym up on Belmont. There's a listener of ours, I believe from the Rick Emerson Show, who said that he had purchased an existing structure on Belmont, and he had to get it all rewired on the inside because it was just not suitable for his needs. And he had Squires Electric come on down, and they took out all the wiring that was there. They upgraded it. They got everything installed, and it was good to go. And he said they were polite. They were courteous. They were prompt. They were efficient. They gave him an estimate up front that ended up being almost exactly what he paid, and of course he felt good about supporting the Rick Emerson Show and Legion of News. So if you have an existing building, if you're going to be moving into a new building or remodeling, if you're going to be repairing, if you're going to be updating, you got an inspection coming up, anything like that, and it's not just electrical wiring, it's if you got your Ethernet wiring you need to have it taken care of, or you got that thing so the like the chick on the fifth floor can leave her lights on, and then the guy at the desk can do an all page through the building and let everybody know, like, hey, your lights are on, whether it's the intercom wiring, anything like that. You need to contact Squires Electric and have their number handy and have their website bookmarked in case you're going to be getting that done in the future, so you can contact them. SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Do you ever have somebody reference a meme and you're not quite sure what they're talking about?
All the time.
So this just says, let's see. This is another thing about our science news from yesterday. This says... Pardon me. This says, regarding science, no, I've lost it. Oh, for the love of God. Oh, the humanity. Wait. Okay, so this says, about yesterday's Legion of News science fail. Rick, I was wondering if your strident phrase of the day from yesterday, "It's a closed system," can become the new Ralph Johnson. I don't know what the old Ralph Johnson is. And he says, thanks, best show ever, Daniel.
Well, Ralph Johnson was the fellow who called us that one morning.
Was that the guy from,
yeah, he wanted to know about the Ice Road Truckers guy.
Where was he calling from, like Kentucky or?
St. Pete.
St. Petersburg, Florida.
Yeah.
That's right, he's the guy that called the Rick Emerson Show. Okay, all right. So, I don't understand what that means, though.
I don't either.
How would It's a Closed System become the new Ralph Johnson?
I don't know.
I thought maybe he was referring to like a Leroy Jenkins kind of a thing, but maybe not. Okay, well, whatever. Sure.
Just go along with it.
Have at it. All right, here's Don Taylor.
That's
I'm sorry. Let me turn off the science. There's too much science happening here. Hold
Make
on
the
second.
Science go away.
All right, here is Don Taylor.
A lawsuit filed in Multnomah County Court is seeking $7,500 from a McDonald's restaurant on Burnside. Lawyers for Ronald Massey filed the suit in response to what they say happened to him at 1 a.m. on October 22nd. A police report says three men, believed to be in their early 20s, harassed Massey while he was waiting for food in the drive-thru lane. The report says one of the men jumped on the hood of Massey's Mercedes and caused it to cave in. Another man allegedly punched Massey in the face. "I just saw the kid hanging onto the side of the car," said Nikki Bruce, who witnessed the assault. "And, like, sliding down, and the guy was obviously trying to accelerate and get away from the kid. I just saw him smear all this stuff down the side of his car." Massey's lawyer says the restaurant has a legal obligation to provide a safe environment for customers. The franchisee did not grant media interviews, but released a statement saying, you know, it's a pending legal matter. They're not going to comment. Neighborhood residents have different opinions about the lawsuit because they are, you know, the man on the street, and they have opinions. Mark Wade, who lives in the area, says, "I know this can be a pretty rough neighborhood. I do not think it should be McDonald's responsibility."
And this is Burnside and where?
Northwest, so it's the... I'm not sure where.
They're not talking about the McDonald's on, like, Burnside and 17th or something.
Possibly.
That's not really... Okay. Anybody who says that is a rough neighborhood has really... I mean, it's...
No.
They need to get out more.
No.
Because it's...
It's on Burnside in Northwest. Portland.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and in Northwest, anything doesn't really count as being a rough neighborhood. What did they smear on the outside of his car?
I don't know. They didn't say.
This story is full of holes. There's by which I mean there's big gaps there where I feel like details ought to be.
It's a story about a guy who drives a Mercedes being mad because somebody did something to him at McDonald's.
Yeah.
So for lack of anything better to do, he's suing the McDonald's.
The story appears to be about a guy whose Mercedes was slightly less clean than when he went to the McDonald's. Mm. And so therefore he feels the need to file a lawsuit.
The hood of his car was damaged.
Okay.
But
because guys were on his car.
Right.
Okay. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's not even that I don't understand the story. I mean, I don't. It's just that I'm just trying to care. No, I got nothing. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A teenage beauty queen has filed suit against the organizers of the Miss San Antonio beauty pageant after she was stripped of her title for gaining too much weight. 17-year-old Dominique Ramirez received an email last January notifying her that she had been replaced by one of the competition's runner-ups for missing too many events and also for violating the terms of her contract with regard to her appearance. She was doing a photo shoot, and I asked her to wear her wardrobe from the competition, but it did not fit her. I told her, we just need to get you on an exercise size program, said pageant spokeswoman Linda Woods. We need to be ready to compete for Miss Texas and like any elite athlete. As a Miss San Antonio reigning queen, she has to live up to our rules and regulations and the standards of our contract. A Texas judge has issued a restraining order preventing organizers from formally taking the Miss San Antonio title away from Ramirez, which would prevent her from competing in the Miss Texas pageant.
This is two stories in a row where it's like my brain is just refusing to listen. It's like I keep trying to brain focus on Miss San Antonio and her plight, and then my brain keeps saying, no, I don't want to. And then it's just a whole thing back and forth.
Well, maybe you need to hear the dulcet tones of Press Secretary Robert Gibbs.
Well, that always helps with everything.
President Obama is hosting a GOP leadership lunch today, or he's being hosted there today. Press Secretary Robert Gibbs says a variety of topics are on the agenda, including the economy and spending.
I think the president will have a chance to talk with them many of the things that he outlined in the State of the Union, and I have no doubt that they have their cares and concerns as well.
This must be like one of those really, really tense dinners you have with in-laws, you know, where it's like, I won't mention any names, but you know, my wife has one friend in particular who doesn't like me, and I don't like her, and everybody knows. I mean, and everybody's aware of the situation. Lara knows I don't care for her friend. Lara knows the friend doesn't like me. Everybody in the room understands the deal. But the common element is my wife. And so every now and again, like once every 3 months, I am required to go have a social evening or a dinner or whatever with this friend and whoever she's bonking at that particular time. Whatever poor soul she has. Whatever sad, like hard luck bust out case she has seduced with her alleged feminine wiles.
Okay, in one sentence, why don't you like her?
She's too much like me.
Oh, okay. Do you think that's why she doesn't like you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I could try to be... I mean, I was going to try to say something snarky, but I mean, really, she's a lot like me, which I guess makes sense because it's probably because my wife foolishly picked me and yet also picked this horrible woman to be her friend. But I will acknowledge that the woman and I have very, very similar personalities. We have a lot of traits that are we are not that far apart in some ways.
Okay.
So it's like we've all just agreed that like once every so often we'll just get together and we'll like go out or we'll like have dinner or, whatever it is we're going to do. And it's just like the most tense, like brittle politeness on the surface, where underneath it's like a combination of like loathing and looking at your watch and wondering when you can leave. And that's what I always imagine these leadership breakfasts and lunches are like, because they have one of these like every month. And it's just got to be fascinating and horribly dull all at once to see this.
Well, Gibbs made the announcement yesterday afternoon.
Let's see. Gibbs two.
Tomorrow afternoon at 12:30, the president will host Speaker Boehner, Majority Leader Cantor, and Majority Whip McCarthy for lunch here at the White House.
I like the title of Majority Whip.
Yeah.
It just seems like a thing that is, a thing that ought to sound silly, but somehow ends up sounding great. I have no further observations.
We should have a whip here.
We should come up with somebody who's like a show whip.
Yeah.
Or a company whip.
Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll look into that.
Let's do entertainment.
Here's your entertainment news. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes your way next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Today we got your Hick Watch, Democracy in the March, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. We'll have clue number 3 in the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. And we'll get to the long-delayed top 5 from listener Jerry. That's all coming up. Here's your entertainment news.
Prosecutors formally charged Lindsay Lohan on Wednesday with felony grand theft related to a necklace alleged taken from a California jewelry store last month.
This is so great. I actually called my wife into the home office. She was walking by in the hallway. I said, honey, come in here for a second. It's the most glorious thing. And she said, what is the economy? Is the economy fixed? Do we have health care? Has something glorious happened to our own personal economy? And I said, no. It's Lindsay Lohan. They've charged her. They've formally, officially, and I was going on. I was just gibbering with excitement about it, because it's been a long time since we've had any sort of proper scandal with a celebrity.
The charge comes 5 weeks after the actress was released for... And don't you wish we had a Lindsay Lohan watch?
Yes.
We've needed one for a while.
Yeah.
Charge comes 5 weeks after the actress was released from court-ordered drug rehabilitation and less than 3 weeks before a judge said he might free her from supervised probation from a 2007 drunk driving conviction. The 24-year-old actress allegedly walked out of the store with the necklace on January 22nd. The owner reported the theft to the Los Angeles Police Department, which investigated the allegation and presented evidence to the DA's office last week. The necklace was handed over to police just before they were to execute a search warrant to look for the jewelry in Lohan's Venice, California apartment.
Here's what's great about this story, but also frustrating, is that this is the judge who said, I think 17 different times now, and one more slip-up. He's the judge in this. The judge in this story seems to be a little bit like the dean in all the college comedies, where he says, "You know, one more thing, and I'll kick you punks off of campus." And it never really happens, because the one time she went to jail, I think it was only for like 3 hours or whatever. But I mean, this is like a serious.
No, yeah,
this seems like an actual real crime.
Shoplifting offenses are usually charged as petty theft, but that's because the property would be valued at less than $950.
Right.
This necklace,
grand theft,
is ostensibly one of a kind. And is worth $2,500. And so, yeah, that's felony grand theft under California law. And the penalty ranges from 16 months to 3 years in state prison.
Have they explained how it is that they think it was stolen? In other words, like, was she walking around and said, look over there, and, like, stuck the thing in her pocket?
No, there hasn't been any details about how this happened.
All right.
Just that she was there, then it was missing, then somebody who knows her brought it back.
Uh-huh. I think whoever it was that it was not dropped off at the store. I guess it was dropped off at the police department. And that makes you think that it probably wasn't her, because I would imagine she wouldn't just... Even Lindsay Lohan probably isn't dumb enough to walk into a police station. It makes you wonder who the sad soul was that she just lassoed in the drop. You know, here's a manila envelope. Take it to the police. Don't ask any questions.
Well, if she actually... I'm sure she has some kind of an assistant who handles things for her, because honestly,
what a sad job,
can you imagine her handling anything on her own? And that's got to be just the worst job in the world.
Just nothing but cleaning up sputum every day.
Sex and the City actress Cynthia Nixon's fiance, Christine Marinoni, gave birth to a baby boy named Max Ellington Nixon Marinoni on Monday. Nixon has two children from her previous relationship with photographer Danny Moses.
Now, Cynthia Nixon, she's not the one that had the sex video out, though.
No.
Okay.
No, she was the smart lawyer chick with the short red hair. She's the one who's done like tons and tons of Broadway, who
All
was
right.
actually considered a serious actress before she did Sex and the City. Mad Men creator Matthew, is it Weiner or Wiener?
It is Weiner,
I
believe.
Mad Men creator Matthew Weiner was given the Vermeil Medal for Cultural and Other Contributions Society by Paris Mayor Bertrand Delano. Joining him for Tuesday's ceremony at Paris' City Hall were Mad Men cast members Christina Hendricks and John Slattery. Weiner told AP that it was very meaningful to be given the honor. I fell in love with Paris through the movies, he said. Former American Idol contestant Sanjaya Malakar will make his stage debut February 23rd in the musical Freckleface Strawberry. The show is based on a children's book written by actress Julianne Moore.
Right now, there's sort of an internal struggle about whether I want to be talking about Sanjaya. Because I forgot he existed until just this moment. He's like the Tay Zonday guy, right? I don't even know. I mean, he's not even like at a William Hung level where I just sort of keep him there, you know, like I keep him there in the comedic coat room of my mind, you know, like in case I need to put him on for some reason. Sanjaya, all I remember about him is that he's kind of a weird carrot top looking guy.
No, he was the kind of sexy, sultry young.
Right, but he's all like really tall and really like spindly with the huge bushy hair on top, like mess of hair,
well,
right?
Kind of, but he had dark flowy.
Well, not
hair.
Not in terms of complexion, because he has the dark hair. But I remember him when I conjure him up in my mind. I remember him looking like he looks like a Middle Eastern carrot top, the way that carrot top used to look. That's what I always picture him as, and for some reason, then I always picture him standing on stage next to carrot top, and I don't know why.
I don't either.
It's just the way that my brain has organized things. It's like when you look at a drawer at home and you go, well, why did I put these socks with this shirt? This doesn't make any sense.
That's him.
Oh, see, I remember him having, like, a totally different look. I thought he had, like a huge sort of, like, a fro thing going on.
No, he had kind of 70s shag hair, like that.
Oh, see, it's weird because I remember him looking totally different than that in some ways. That shows up. So my brain didn't even bother to get like a complete composite sketch of him before I filed him away in the drawer.
But really, do you need to be storing information about Sanjaya anywhere in your brain?
Probably not.
No.
I just have sort of an animatic of him. That's really all it is.
It's on your Anapad.
Yes, it is, Don.
Your Anapad, too.
By the way, somebody wants to note about the story we had earlier this hour. It says, ask yourself, Rick Emerson, will you get people defending Tacoma now as much as we defend Detroit? I think not. No, it is. You see, that's the thing. That's the difference between Tacoma and Detroit. Is Detroit... And again, it sounds like I'm just... when I say that Detroit is like, you know, has people defending it, at least Detroit has... There's something of note there. You know, there's the auto industry, and it is the Motor City and so forth. And also, Detroit seems to be so bad and so horrible in certain ways that you do kind of root for it to come back. You know, it's like the Bad News Bears of cities. A little more felonious. Whereas Tacoma's just sort of, you know... Tacoma's... I'm sorry, I don't know why the science news just started playing. Tacoma's not even really like... Tacoma's not even... doesn't even really have a negative charisma. Tacoma's just... You know what Tacoma's like? Tacoma is just like... It's like a guy that comes to your house to pick up your sister, and then you find out later that he, like, gave her chlamydia and ruined her credit.
Well, it's like, I grew up in Southern California, and I lived in a beach town. And my father's relatives, who had moved out from Nebraska, lived a few miles inland. And they lived in Lawndale. And Lawndale is just one of those flat, featureless suburbs with, like, nothing going for it. And everybody's lawn is
right.
Full of dirt clods and rocks and... And it's just a terrible, terrible, gray, dull place. And I always used to think, how is it that you could move from Nebraska to Southern California and get so close to the beach, but move someplace so awful?
Well, it's like Tacoma, which is within. I mean, there's a reason that there's a city called SeaTac, is because Seattle's right there. Seattle, which, you know, has its problems, but is really a great city in many ways. You look at Seattle, you go, that's Seattle. Here I am. Seattle's.
It's kind of like Camas. I think it's kind of like you're not even in Vancouver,
right? And Tacoma's an entire city where it's a city where, like, every you just picture every single child running around in saggy, dirty plastic diapers, where the tape is sort of gummed up and coming off.
And yet, romance, according to Yelp.
There you go. On that note, we will bring the curtain down on this episode of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get it via iTunes later on today, or as a direct MP3 download here, or Legion of News. .com. Coming up next hour, The Rick Emerson Show storms the airwaves at rickemersonshow.com. We would appreciate your patronage. Give it a listen, won't you? We come to you each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milkpacking district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting episode of Legion of News.